We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org. Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Happy Inauguration Day to all who celebrate the love of America and the end of the, winter of dark and death and cold or whatever Biden said. Well, it's finally closing the chapter on someone that I think is the worst president in American history, or at least in modern American history. I know there's some debate over some pretty bad presidents in the past. But this morning, as Kayleigh McEnany just posted, Biden issued preemptive pardons for General Mark Milley, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and members of the January 6th committee, among others. This might be the ultimate news dump, she says, and I think she's spot on with that, done hours before the swearing in, with the assurance that this news will be overshadowed. And this is, of course, the last minute attempt for Biden to again up the ante and suggest that no one will be held accountable for anything over the last couple of years, over the last 4 years. And Michael Schellenberger, who you'll remember was a reporter that was involved in a lot of the Twitter files and talking about all of that, so kind of gained prominence, at least more mainstream from that, said this. Biden pardoned Fauci. He says it's not an admission of guilt, but if Fauci were innocent, no pardon would be needed. The evidence suggests Fauci helped create the COVID pandemic, then covered it up. The investigation must go forward. All COVID and Fauci files must be released. And I couldn't agree more. And this is why I have said for a long time, even among those on the right, that there should not just be a blanket pardon from Trump for everybody who was involved in January 6th, because this will just continue to increase and up the ante of no accountability for anything that anybody did over the last four or plus years. I mean, look at the Hunter Biden pardon. This is all about ensuring that the law and process is followed. Now, were some of the J6ers absolutely treated unfairly? Were there process issues involved? Should there be compensation for that? All of those are very valid questions. But to issue a blanket pardon and suggest that people who were violent that day, who actually did break the law with breaking and entering, trespass, you know, some of those things, shouldn't be held accountable or should get a full clemency, to just basically say, yeah, sure, that was fine. That's not how we do things in America. And Biden now issuing these pardons, I think, fully suggests that Fauci is guilty. Of course, there is that implication. And Schellenberger is absolutely right. And to pardon Mark Milley as well, and then as far as the to go as far as the January 6th committee, suggests don't even look over there. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. Everything that we did for the last 4 years out to get Trump beyond the obvious lawfare was just completely fine, and we don't want anybody to be held accountable for anything. Let's just completely move forward into a new era and forget all that happened. I don't think that the American people are ready for that, actually. I'm certainly not. I think that we need to go back and actually have a detailed account of who did what that was wrong. And there is, by the way, a lot of wrong on both sides. And this isn't just a both sides sort of argument. It's saying that fairness and true justice and administration of justice in this country requires that we don't just say, oh, we're completely fine with the full pardon of all of the January 6th committee or the full pardon of all of the J6ers, depending on whether we have an R or a D after our name. That's not how justice is supposed to work in this country. It is supposed to be blind. It is supposed to be fair. It's supposed to be objective. And if we, especially as Christians, want a fair administration of justice in this country and want legitimacy restored to the Department of Justice, to the FBI, to these institutions of government that are actually necessary in order for us to have justice and a well-ordered society, then we shouldn't just want the outcome that our side or our party prefers. We should want actual fairness. And so, of course, this is and should be a news item for the day. And I think that for Christians, the bottom line is that we have to look at justice as an aspect and a characteristic of God's own character and the person of justice and truth that we need to emulate and we need to require from our government. And that is not dependent on whether Biden is in office, which thankfully he is leaving today. And it doesn't depend on whether Trump is in office or thankfully Kamala Harris is not getting inaugurated today. And that is something that we should all agree on. And so with Trump getting inaugurated today, I'm celebrating this, by the way. I'm celebrating the fact that the communists are leaving office and that they're not getting sworn in today. And there was a piece yesterday that Trump is going to revoke the security clearances of about 50 plus individuals who covered up or withheld information about the Hunter Biden laptop issue. And that is a fair administration of justice. We should all be saying that is a very good thing. Return these institutions to what they actually were established for and ensure that we have accountability for everyone that is involved, regardless of whether they're Republican or Democrat. And so I'm celebrating today the fact that hopefully Trump and his cabinet, all of his nominees that we heard from most of them last week, and all of the personnel will hopefully all have an objective measure of what the government is obligated to do in mind as they are administrating their offices and their duties and their oaths. Now, we know, of course, that not everyone, by and large, in the Trump administration is going to be Christian, much less conservative, but we still need to be pushing for those types of individuals who have a biblical worldview to be part of the Trump administration, because he'll hire a lot more than a Kamala Harris administration would. And that's a very good thing as well. So we need to also be praying for our nation. We need to be praying that a lot of the damage that was done in the last 4 years from the Biden administration with respect to weaponizing some of these institutions like the lawfare against Christians and the lawfare against conservatives, the censorship that we saw amid COVID and the Twitter files, the types of tyrannies with trying to mandate the COVID vaccine, the diversity, equity, and inclusion push, the push for genital mutilation, the push against traditional marriage, traditional families, against the rights of legitimate parentage, the rise of this idea of just total inclusiveness of any kind of gender or parentage that you want to identify with. I mean, all of this nonsense that is rooted in a completely pagan worldview that is wholly antithetical to a moral and upright society from a biblical worldview needs to be stopped. And with that, President-elect Trump now will sign, according to Fox News, more than 200 executive actions on his first day in office, a massive record-setting first wave of policy priorities focused on border security, energy, reducing the cost of living for American families, ending DEI programs across federal government, and more. A senior administration official who's familiar with the executive actions said Trump will sign multiple, quote, omnibus executive orders that each contain dozens of major executive actions. Again, that's coming from Fox News. And I'm looking forward to seeing what each of those contain, seeing kind of a breakdown of where those priorities are. Because as Trump said at his rally yesterday, and then he posted a video that I'm going to play at the end of this segment, just moments before we came on air, talking about his vision for how we are entering this new era. This is going to be a new kind of refocus over the next 4 years. And I'm excited to see all of that. And I think the way that we as Christians need to approach this is with cautious optimism. I am optimistic that God has given us a reprieve of all of the wicked and the evil, perverse actions of those who, including Biden, who were in that administration, who pushed for evil and perverse things. I mean, even like looking at all of the transgender day of visibility and those disgusting perverse actions on the White House lawn. I mean, all of those things are part of a wicked and perverse administration. Those things, I'm optimistic, will be gone in a Trump administration. That is a good thing. But we need to also approach this cautiously optimistic, because we know that that Trump currently is not as pro-life as he was in the first administration. There are some things that that so far, you know, we can have questions and concerns about, like we're going to talk later on in the program about the future of TikTok and why suddenly a lot of conservatives, or maybe we'll just call them MAGA, were all for banning TikTok. And now that Trump is saying, you know, no, we're going to pause on that, now suddenly TikTok is fine. Well, again, that's not our standard of right and wrong in a moral and upright society. It's just whatever comes out of the Trump administration. We need to be cautiously optimistic, but always consider each of these actions from the Trump administration against a standard of biblical truth. And we need to be able to, on one hand, pray for the success of the Trump administration, for all of the personnel. We need to pray for the success of America, because we have, as American citizens, a vested interest in that. We need to be champions of Trump in this aspect as our commander in chief. And I will be the first to do that. And I will also be the first to raise questions and to critique and criticize, even when those actions, if they are not lined up with scripture, and encourage those in authority to do what is right. So we need to, on one hand, be advocates for the success of America and for the Trump administration, but also be willing to have a standard, not just of whatever the Republican Party or MAGA or Trump himself wants, but a standard ultimately of biblical truth. And I would remind you of the supremacy of God this morning. I was reading before we came on air Colossians 1, and this starts in verse 15. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. That is our eternal promise. So no matter what happens over the next 4 years, good or bad, right versus wrong, the clash between good and evil will continue to persist as long as this fallen world persists, until he returns or calls us home. Then we will see that clash, but our hope ultimately is in our eternal Savior. So we need to have an eternal perspective, but with that, be excited today and be praying for the future of our nation. And I want to get to this last clip before the break. This is what Trump posted as his vision of America, which I think is actually really encouraging.
If I give you one message to hold in your hearts today, it's this: never, ever give up.
FBI raid at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence.
Deadly force being authorized.
Nothing worth doing ever came easy.
Donald J. Trump has been indicted.
Jack Smith has again indicted former President Trump.
Over the course of your life, you will find that things are not always fair. You will find that things happen to you that you do not deserve.
Like they said, take a look at what happened.
But you have to put your head down and fight. Never, ever, ever give up. The more people tell you it's not possible, that it can't be done, the more you should be absolutely determined to prove them wrong.
CNN projects that Donald Trump has been elected president.
Treat the word impossible as nothing more than motivation. Relish the opportunity to be an outsider, because it's the outsiders who change the world.
250 million Americans are not garbage.
And it'll make a real and lasting difference. The more that a broken system tells you that you're wrong, the more certain you should be that you must keep pushing ahead. You must keep pushing forward.
I think that we just witnessed the greatest political comeback in the history of the United States of America.
So just remember that. Never stop fighting for what you believe in and for the people who care about you. America is beginning a new chapter. Our best days are yet to come. I can promise you that.
That was President Trump posting this morning about his inauguration. And I do think our best days are yet to come because of our hope in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We need to be praying for the future of our nation. I'm praying for President Trump and everyone in the administration today. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellison. This Sanctity of Life Month, we honor the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe versus Wade. Sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at even greater risk now. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines, and that's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics have rescued over 300,000 babies from abortion and have prayed with over 80,000 women to come to Christ.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be three. I don't know where my life would be without her.
An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. This is Jenna Ellis asking you to join Preborn in protecting life. One ultrasound session costs $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. Any gift will help, $100, $200, even $1,000. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And coming from the National Review this morning, Hamas releases the first three hostages after a ceasefire deal passed. The long-awaited ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas took effect on Sunday, leading to the release of the first three of the remaining hostages held in Gaza since October 7th, 2023. The start of the truce was delayed by 2 or 3 hours after Hamas failed to release the names of the hostages set to be released Sunday, a sign of the fragile truce between the two warring sides. And our good friend Joel Rosenberg, who's the editor-in-chief of All Israel News, joins me today, and he posted this piece. The headline is this: I hate this hostage deal, but here's why I support it. So, Joel, good morning, and explain that that very interesting headline.
Yeah, great to be with you, Jenna. Very dramatic, historic couple days here, and emotional, right? We are already experiencing the Trump effect, and most Israelis are happy about that, meaning nothing was happening over the last year or so with the hostages. There seemed to be no hope of getting them out, even though we were crushing Hamas day after day after day, until President Trump won. And President Trump, started putting an ultimatum on Hamas and said very clearly, you know, there'll be all hell to pay if the hostages aren't released by the time he takes office. And that, plus sending his point man, Steve Witkoff, to the region, this has changed everything. And the good news is we've got our first three hostages back. I want to talk about them in a moment. But look, the price that Israel is paying to get these hostages out is very high. And that's what makes it controversial. That's what makes it painful, right? We're already in 15 months of war. We've got 98 hostages, or 97, that were in Gaza, but we think many of them are dead. We don't know how many are alive. And the next 42 days, we're supposed to get 33 of them out. We're told that the majority of them are alive, but we don't know how many. But for each hostage that we get back that's alive, we have to give up and release 30 Palestinian prisoners, many of whom are hardened terrorists with blood on their hands. And for every Israeli woman soldier that we release, or that we get back, we have to release 50 terrorists that we have captured, and they were convicted of these horrific, horrific crimes: rape, torture, murder. So it's a very high price, but 73% of Israelis support it. They hate it also, but they support it like I do, because our highest priority is to get those who are living home.
Yeah, and I would agree completely with that sentiment, that I was not a fan of this deal at all, but I also understand why it was so important to get the hostages home. But at the same time, Joel Rosenberg, for the future, I mean, doesn't this suggest to Israel's allies, and insofar as America was part of helping this type of negotiation, that now we're willing to negotiate with terrorists?
Yeah, but the truth is, Jenna, and I'm getting a lot of that type of blowback on X and other social media, and I get that. Nobody wants to negotiate with terrorists, and the American leadership has said for 50 years that we won't do it. Except that we do, right? Biden and Obama gave hundreds of millions of dollars to Iran and other terrorist organizations, collectively over time, to get people back. Trump got people back and he negotiated, but he didn't give up money and he didn't fork over cash. So there's a difference there. My point is we are winning. We're crushing Hamas. It's true. We're crushing Hezbollah. It's true. We've taken huge hits against the Iranian regime, but we still have our own people alive in those terror dungeons. And I've been there. And I just have to say, we have a binding social contract in Israel that if people are stolen out of their beds by demon-possessed people, if we can fight and rescue them, wonderful. But if we have to make a deal with the devil, and this is what is happening, Hamas is satanic, so we're making a deal with the devil. But the country, after 15 months of war, has made a decision. We know what we're doing, but we still say, what if it was us? Right? We're still doing unto others what we would want someone to do for us, which is come get us out, and we'll all live to fight another day. The fight against Hamas is not over. We're winning, but we're going to have to pause here to get our people home. And that's, it comes at a price, but it's a price that 73% of us are willing to pay. But, one of Netanyahu's coalition members, they've quit, and they're threatening to bring down the whole government because they don't want to be part of this deal. But very rarely do Israelis or Jews generally do we agree almost 75% on anything. But here we do.
Well, so where does the tension and the war, frankly, go from here?
Well, the reason I think that we're – let's go back to the Trump effect. And on the day of his inauguration, which is really astonishing historically, number 45 is going to become number 47. And, with all that was thrown against him and with a number of mistakes that he made, admittedly, over the last 4 years or so. But the Trump effect is Prime Minister Netanyahu was willing to make a deal that he didn't like either. He hated the deal also. But why did he do it? Because Trump wants him to, number one, and Trump and his team are telling Israel something that Biden and his team didn't tell us, which is, we are with you. If Hamas breaks this deal, we are going to send so many weapons to you. We're going to help you finish them off. We're never going to allow Hamas to become the leaders of Gaza again. We're not going to let them have a role in the future of Gaza. Biden and his team never said anything like this. Trump and his team are saying this, and we believe Trump because, you know, whatever else, you know, your audience thinks of the former and now imminent president, he is the most pro-Israel president Israel has ever seen, that America has ever seen, and he's serious. And the enemies of America in this region, Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, they are all trembling. They may look like they're cheering, but that's a show. They're terrified. Otherwise, they wouldn't be releasing anybody, right? Trump comes in, they release. Biden was in, they, you know, maybe eventually we'll get to it. I don't know. So the Trump effect is already, you know, in addition to getting rid of Justin Trudeau already in Canada, God bless him, right? The Chinese are shaking, the Russians are shaking, the Iranians are shaking, and Hamas is shaking too. That's why they're willing to make a deal. It's still a painful deal for us, but they know we're coming for them. And you know, Hamas's days are numbered, but right now we're taking a pause.
Yeah, and you mentioned Joel Rosenberg, my special guest this morning, who is the editor-in-chief of All Israel News. You can find that at allisrael.com. You mentioned that, you know, this is an unprecedented, you know, very historic move to have this kind of ceasefire agreement after so long and so many months of this conflict on the day before Trump is inaugurated. And some of the pushback that I've seen on X with this is that this wasn't possibly the best deal overall that could have been struck. And it was less the art of the deal, more of the art of getting a deal right now, just so that there would be this kind of momentum going into the inauguration. What's your thought on that perspective?
No, I totally reject that analysis. This is the best deal that could have been gotten. It couldn't have been gotten by Biden because Biden kept showing weakness. Biden wanted us to surrender last May when he rolled out his big three-stage plan. That was so that Israel would never fight again in Gaza. But what was the deal that Biden was offering? That was at a time when Ismail Haniyeh, the head of Hamas living in Doha, Qatar, was still alive. That was at a time where Yahya Sinwar, the mastermind, demonic mastermind of the October 7th invasion and massacre, was still alive. That's when Mohammed Def, the military strategist for Hamas in Gaza, was still alive. And so were about 80% of Hamas terror fighters. So that's what Biden wanted us to surrender. Trump does not want us to surrender. But Trump went in with his team and they made the best deal they could. And by the way, and did it in a bipartisan fashion, working with the Biden team, but Trump got it done. And I guarantee you, if there was a better deal that could have been gotten, Trump and his team would have gotten it. But the point is, you know, whatever flaws there are, this is the only deal that could have been gotten. And it doesn't require us to surrender. And we know, and Netanyahu knows we don't have to surrender because Trump is the sheriff coming back into power. And so, Netanyahu has the confidence to make a difficult deal, a politically difficult deal that could blow up his whole coalition and bring him down potentially. He's now just two seats away from losing control of the government because he just lost this party that quit over this far right wing party resigned from the government. But he's doing it because he knows that Trump will have his back, will have Israel's back, and that's giving all of us the courage and confidence to say, we're not about to surrender to Hamas. We're getting our people home because that's our highest priority. And then we will live to fight another day. And Trump, in this case, will be standing with us rather than cutting us loose or throwing us under the bus. Like it's so often felt, not always to be fair, but so often felt like what was happening under Biden and Blinken.
And I agree with that analysis. And certainly if this was Kamala Harris coming in today, which thank the Lord we are spared from that.
This
deal would not have happened. And so, you know, I know that there are still, you know, some critics of Trump and the way that he does things. And that's fine. I mean, you know, we should always be critiquing. But at the same time, I think you're absolutely right that this is the best deal. And so moving forward, though, into the next 4 years, when everyone knows that the sheriff is back in town, and we saw the difference between what happened on the world stage with Trump in power in the U.S. versus the last 4 years of Biden, Trump absolutely is pro-Israel. And so how is that going to change just the nature of foreign policy and how the rest of the countries are acting even comparatively, you know, with one another, knowing that Donald Trump is back on scene?
Well, I go back to this concept of the Trump effect. It's already the Trump just winning has forced Hamas because the terrorists got terrified. So it forced them to start making huge concessions that they weren't going to make. The Trump effect has already cost Justin Trudeau his premiership in Canada. He literally collapsed politically because he realized he had no future in Canada. They already were hating him anyway. And then Trump was going to get super tough with Canada, which should be an ally, not an enemy. And I wouldn't call it an enemy under Trudeau, but wasn't being a friend. And conservatives are now poised to sweep in the coming elections. I think the next two countries to watch closely are China, Communist China, and Russia. As you know, Jenna, and we can talk more about it when we get closer to the March 11th launch date of my new political thriller, The Beijing Betrayal. It's about the Communist Chinese threat to the United States, to our allies in the Pacific, and Communist China's increasing close ties to the Iranian terror regime and to terror regimes in the Middle East. And as a political thriller, The Beijing Betrayal is about what happens if we get blindsided by an increasingly dangerous communist Chinese regime while we're all so focused on the Middle East or focused on Russia alone. But that in real life, the debate over TikTok right now, right? President Trump has been so tough on the Chinese over time. Now he's showing, some possible flexibility here because he also wants young people to not think that he's just abandoning TikTok. But look, it's Trump who told us and his team how dangerous TikTok is. So it's interesting, Trump is starting to signal to communist China, listen, I'm willing to work with you guys, but I'm not just going to roll over and play dead. America's back, and you're going to have to make concessions. The same thing with Russia. It will be interesting to see, right? On the one hand, Trump picks J.D. Vance to be his vice president. And wonderful. J.D. Vance is not a big fan of giving arms and aid to Ukraine. But Trump hasn't gone all in on Vance's hesitancy to support Ukraine. In fact, Trump is sending the signal to Putin that I might send more weapons to Ukraine, to get them in a better bargaining position to get that war over. So I think the worst enemies in the world are shaking right now in their boots because they don't know how to assess how Trump's going to treat them. That is leadership. That is America
and
being strong.
That's why we should be absolutely. That's why we should be encouraged today with the inauguration. Joel Rosenberg, thanks so much. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And on today, which is Inauguration Day, let's encourage the Trump administration to be as pro-life as they were in the first 4 years. And you can do that as well by supporting Preborn and our partnership with American Family Radio Network and Preborn. We are doing a campaign to cover ultrasounds for women so that they can, and mothers, to ensure that they choose life for their baby. So abortion is the leading cause of death in the United States and the world. Over 66 million babies' lives have been tragically taken since Roe versus Wade. And with the abortion pill as well accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at even greater risk. But you can help us help moms choose life and help save 4,500 babies just this week. And so this is with preborn. So your gift of $28 provides one woman seeking an abortion a free ultrasound, giving her the opportunity to choose life for her baby. $140 provides five free ultrasounds, reaching five women with the message of life. Or you could sponsor five or even more ultrasounds. Our goal this week is to help save 4,500 babies, so sponsor 4,500 ultrasounds. Please consider giving a gift. You can call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or donate online at AFR.net. That is AFR.net. And let's welcome in now our next guest, Gerard Folletti, who is the founder of the Lawfare Project and senior counsel. And Gerard, I want to get your take as well on these last minute pardons from Joe Biden. I mean, I think this is just making a mockery of the flouting of the law that clearly Fauci and, you know, some of his aides and his actions, everything that occurred in the whole entire COVID narrative. Then you have the January 6th committee, you have General Milley. I mean, all of this, in my view, is just upping the ante and saying nobody's going to be held accountable for anything that they did over the last 4 years.
By using an unprecedented pardon to essentially give grace to people who are not accused of wrongdoing, and now there's no way to hold them accountable if they are guilty of something. The issue ultimately is that we do need to know what these people were involved with. There do need to be investigations, even if there is no prosecution possible now that they've been pardoned. And ironically, these pardons make these investigations more possible and more likely to produce some answers, because these people can now not claim the Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination and refuse to answer questions. So on the one hand, it's very disappointing to see the Biden administration be so untransparent and decide to block people from being held accountable. On the other hand, we might get some answers.
Yeah, and that's maybe perhaps a silver lining through all of this, which it's true that, as you mentioned, that now if there were any investigations and so forth, they can't claim the Fifth Amendment but privilege. But what about state level investigations? I know, you know, some like Governor Ron DeSantis even posted, you know, saying this is ridiculous, that Biden is doing this, lacks accountability, all of that. Of course, I'm paraphrasing. But, you know, just like what we've seen in some of the lawfare against Trump, if there was a pardon on the federal level, you know, states like New York and others have gone after Trump on the state level. Could something like that happen with Dr. Fauci, perhaps?
With Dr. Fauci, it's more likely for it to happen on a state level, because his orders, his advice, his guidance, and his behavior during the pandemic is not something that came at a national level. It reached into each and every state. So there is a tie to each and every state that states can leverage, can use to bring about charges after an investigation. It might be a little more difficult with the J6 committee or with Liz Cheney. You'd have to go to Wyoming for that. And we never know what those politics are like at the local level. But I think with Dr. Fauci, there is a good indication that some states do want to have answers to what happened and if there was any criminal behavior to prosecute it. But this also goes back to the lawfare that the Democrats started and waged against Donald Trump and people who supported him. They opened Pandora's box to now distracting America and politicizing every single aspect of government, making it a legal battle when you're just trying to do your job. That's what they did to Donald Trump, and now they're seeing the consequences of trying to hide bad behavior behind pardons.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, the upping of the ante in terms of no one facing accountability for what they did and basically being able to do anything. But now they're also upping the ante, and they have over the last 4 years, of just going after their political opponents. And I hope that there can be some kind of ceasefire perhaps declared, or maybe a reorientation toward actual justice and not the weaponizing of these kinds of institutions. But I don't see, you know, the Democrats really backing off anytime soon. And especially when, you know, Biden is going so far as to declare the Equal Rights Amendment now just a valid part of the Constitution. And this is beyond laughable and absurd. I mean, when you have the National Archives even coming out and saying, no, the ratification process under Article 5 of the Constitution did not actually happen. There was a ratification deadline for the Equal Rights Amendment. But this is just one of those, again, I think one of those talking points that now, because Biden has suddenly declared it as if he's Michael Scott from The Office, just saying, well, I didn't say it, I declared it, so it is, then they're just trying to muddy the waters and perhaps wage some other kind of exorbitant lawfare just as a distraction as Trump comes into office. So, you know, is this something that Democrats are actually serious about?
No, I think the Equal Rights Amendment, where the proclamation, declaration, whatever you want to call it, was a political stunt. It has no legal weight whatsoever. And the only reason it was done was to distract it, to turn attention to an issue that Democrats think might be favorable and they can use to attack Donald Trump. Now, ironically, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think we've seen Donald Trump have more diversity. And he, if you look at his successes, both as president and as a business leader, he has promoted and advanced more women than many other administrations and many other business leaders. So this is something that's not going to go anywhere. It was meant to distract. The other hand, we do have to consider the lawfare that we will see coming out in the next few days, in the next few weeks, as President Trump starts issuing executive orders. As we start laws being passed by a Republican-led Congress that makes sense, we are going to see challenges from Democrats, from the progressive left, at every level. Lawsuits in state courts, lawsuits in federal courts, everything possible to block Donald Trump's agenda.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with that, that this is just going to serve as a talking point to say, so that the Democrats can say, well, look, you know, Biden declared this, and now with whatever comes out of executive orders from Trump, or also the congressional and White House trifecta of the Republicans, the turn of phrase and the sleight of hand will be, oh, look, now the Trump administration, the Republicans are infringing on your rights, and they're trying to take away your rights because this fake straw man that they have now established, they're now going to claim that Trump is attacking. And so it's all just a matter of linguistics, and it's a matter of their public relations campaign. And I personally think if the Trump administration wants to learn from the lessons of the first 4 years, they need to ignore that kind of distraction and not even engage in such worthless nonsense. And so this shouldn't be, oh, we're going to file litigation to challenges. I mean, just ignore it for the stupidity that it is. And I hope, Gerard, that enough people, especially in White House counsel's office and throughout the administration, will avoid those potential pitfalls. What do you see of the really, I mean, almost wholly brand new administration that's coming in terms of that type of personnel difference?
I do think that we're seeing more of a varsity administration than the first time around, certain notable exceptions, of course. But I think that we are seeing a higher level of professionalism, a higher level of understanding of how Washington, D.C. actually works, and less willingness to engage in the fluff and in the propaganda battles, meaning that less willing to fall for the ploys that the Democrats often use. So I think we will see a much more, much better run White House, to be frank, with staff and with counsel that have, as always, given the president good advice, but now there's a mechanism for him to actually listen to it and for there not to be too many voices that lack the experience and wisdom to offer good advice. So I think we're off to a good start when you look at who Trump has appointed to his cabinet and who are staffing certain positions within the White House. And I think that bodes well. I think that we will not see as many distractions as we did in the first term.
I hope that that's true. And I'm hoping and praying that that's true. We know that the Democrats and who are just the party of opposition now are going to try to distract, and delay and try to prevent the Trump administration from having as significant of wins that are possible over the next 4 years as they can. So we need to be praying that the administration would not be distracted by all of those things. So let's talk in the last few minutes that I have with you, Gerard Folletti, who is the senior counsel and founder of the Lawfare Project. Let's talk about TikTok. And this is kind of one of those distractions, I think. But, you know, TikTok was set to be basically be shut down in the United States. Now, Donald Trump is potentially giving it a little bit of new life. Where are we at in terms of just the legal around this? Because if there isn't a divestiture from ByteDance, I mean, that's the laws. The Supreme Court reaffirmed that. So is there something that Donald Trump could do to basically save TikTok, and should he?
There is something he can do. The short answer is that in the law itself, there's a mechanism for getting a 90-day extension or waiver from the executive branch. Donald Trump indicated that he would issue an executive order forestalling, delaying implementation of the law in order to allow TikTok the opportunity to find a way to divest. He was mentioning, or he seems to think that it's possible to structure an ownership where 50% of TikTok is owned by a U.S. entity. So this is something he seems likely to do. We are likely to see an executive order later today that says that the implementation of this law will be delayed. The flip side is I really don't know how beneficial that is, because the ultimate issue is not the First Amendment. We all want more speech. We all want freedom of speech. We don't want our speech suppressed. But we also don't want the propaganda coming from a Chinese communist government. And we also don't want the Chinese communist government having access to sensitive data and being able to use and manipulate that data in war against us. So I think the law speaks to very valid concerns. And I'm hopeful that President Trump does see a way to achieve what this law is sent to do, which is to protect our national security. At the same time, it's interesting to note what Elon Musk tweeted this weekend, and that's a very good point to remember as well. China doesn't allow X to operate there. China blocks U.S. service providers from operating in China. So why should we give unfettered access to our market to a foreign enemy competitor when we don't have access to their market?
Yeah, and I think all of that is excellent analysis. And so why should Trump even care whether TikTok is banned in the United States? I mean, what is even the benefit of trying to give them an opportunity to divest?
Well, I think in part he cares because 170 million users of TikTok care, and that's an important part of our constituency, of our country, who want to have that service, and he wants to try to find a way to deliver it. The other part of it is TikTok is international business and global politics. It's part of the trade issues with China. It's part of the intelligence battle with China and with other adversaries. So this is something that he is very much going to be engaged in for the next 4 years, and how he accomplishes that with ByteDance, with TikTok, may well set the stage for how he handles China generally.
Yeah, and so there have been reports that Trump is set to sign over 200 executive orders on his first day. Whether that'll happen later today, in advance of tomorrow, you know, remains to be seen. But some of these, they're terming them omnibus executive orders because they contain, you know, a lot of different content, like each. And so what do you think we can expect from kind of the top priorities of some of these executive orders?
I think a lot of those orders are going to start with border security. I think they're going to start with ordering certain measures with respect to January 6th investigation and the prosecutions that have taken place. I think we'll see executive orders with regard to the parameters of the Justice Department and its conduct and investigations. We are also likely to see some movement with the Education Department and the woke and progressive curriculum that's been destroying America. But I think the biggest emphasis is going to be on the border and creating that mechanism, or starting to create through executive order the mechanism to remove illegal immigrants.
Yeah, I really hope that a lot of this is actually going to be accomplished. Some of the campaign promises will materialize into a reality in terms of some of these priorities. One of the biggest that I'm concerned about that isn't going to happen, you know, some people have talked about, you know, the mass deportations, maybe not. I hope that we can have confidence in Tom Homan and others, but really is more the dismantling and shutting down of the Department of Education with the announcement of a secretary and then, you know, a deputy and all of that. I'm not as convinced that that's actually going to happen. In just the last 30 seconds we have with you, Gerard, do you think that campaign promise will be fulfilled?
I think it may be fulfilled, but at the last day of his presidency, because whether we like it or not, right now we do need the Department of Education, because it's the best way to shut down all these programs that have been destroying the minds of American children. So for now, let's use the department for good, not for evil, as it's been used for three decades, and then shut it down and give it back to the states.
That's a great plan, from your mouth to Trump's ears. So, Gerard Folletti, thanks so much. And I hope we will see a lot of these campaign promises materializing. But today is January 20th. And again, happy Inauguration Day. Let's pray for the success of the Trump administration and America. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.